Hello, everybody. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Happy Monday. It is 7 past the hour, as it always is this time of night, right? So I've got to spend a little time tonight talking about the Rupert Murdoch crime syndicate that is just getting its ass busted all over the place. This is one of the nicest things. This is like a post or a belated birthday present to me. I have been aware, as you probably have too, because you don't watch the Fox News channel here, but I've been aware for years that this organization that passes itself off as a television news network in the United States is nothing but a propaganda enterprise determined to destroy the country. How many times have we talked about that on this program? And that the Republican Party is not quite a wholly owned subsidiary of Rupert Murdoch, because the capitalist America owns the Republican Party. But Murdoch was one of the people that cracked the whip. And the destruction that the Fox News Channel has done to our electoral and political system is incalculable. I don't think anybody could present a serious estimation of how badly this filthy group of bastards has corrupted the United States, where it concerns political discourse, where it concerns vetting or evaluating candidates, where it concerns reporting news. They have taken it so far into the Joseph Goebbels arena as to render anyone who even comes close to Fox News Channel, including the viewers, as being nothing but neo-Nazis. That's it. Because if you sit in front of Fox News for an hour, or some people watch it all the time, and absorb that stuff, what you are doing is willingly committing yourself, at least in the beginning. At this point, you're probably so goddamn hypnotized you couldn't break free if you wanted to. But you are willingly submitting yourself to not just the worst kind of propaganda, but to false reports, misinformation, disinformation. And it goes on from the moment that pile of dung starts its broadcast day until the moment it signs off. And, of course, the way it signs off, it just runs repeats of earlier programming. So my personal feeling is that, what have they got now, 10 arrests, 4 resignations, the entire goddamn upper echelon of the police department in the UK is falling, well, in London, is falling apart. Scotland Yard is being dissolved in this bath of corruption and slush and slop that is the Murdoch news empire. Jesus God. I am waiting with great anticipation and sweaty palms for the U.S. chapter of this filthy organization's death. Because that's what has to happen. There are already reports that Murdoch is going to be voted out. He's going to lose control. There are some serious investors now who have watched Murdoch's stock plunge over 20%. And at this point, there really isn't a bottom, because this thing hasn't even begun. It hasn't even begun. But I'll tell you, it you know, there's such a thing as, see if I can pronounce it right this time, Schadenfreude. You know, gloating and glorying in someone else's misfortune. That's not really what this is, because this is a bunch of criminals. Everybody who ever worked for them swore an oath by signing on as an employee to be corrupt, to commit fraud, to invade privacy in the most egregious way. and to dump out on their audiences, no matter where the audience was, UK, Australia, United States, I don't know, where all Rupert Murdoch's octopus reaches. And what is this we heard today? The original whistleblower has now been found dead. The victim of suicide. Isn't it amazing how they always commit suicide? Sean Hoare, a former News of the World journalist, who claimed that Andy Coulson, the tabloid's former editor, knew about and encouraged phone hacking, was found dead today, according to The Guardian of the UK. Isn't Coulson the one that went to work for the British Prime Minister? is that right? Mr. Hoare told the New York Times in last year that Coulson was aware of phone hacking at The Sun and News of the World, which are both owned by this Murdoch criminal. Coulson, who was arrested last week in connection with a new investigation into the criminal activity, always denied that he knew about the phone hacking that went on when he was the editor. You know, sure, of course you didn't. You're totally innocent. You and Rebecca, right? And James and the rest of you fleabag sons of bitches. None of you knew anything, did you? And you call yourself journalists just on that basis. You prove your capacity to lie and your inability to even approach the word journalist, much less try to be one. So Mr. Sean Hoare has decided to kill himself. In March this year, Hoare told the BBC that phone hacking was endemic, his word, at News of the World. Nick Davies, the Guardian journalist who first reported in 2009 that phone hacking had been much more widespread than an initial police investigation suggested, wrote of Mr. Hoare today, quote, at a time when the reputation of News of the World journalists is at rock bottom, it needs to be said that the paper's former show business correspondent, Sean Hoare, who died on Monday, was a lovely man. In the saga of the phone hacking scandal, he distinguished himself by being the first former News of the World journalist to come out on the record, telling the New York Times last year that his former friend and editor, Andy Coulson, had actively encouraged him to hack into voicemail. So, the suicides now begin, and, you know, in some cultures, suicide, if that's what happened to Sean Hoare, and of course I, at this point, just reflexively doubt it. I said it's reflexive, that's all. But in some societies, when the criminal activity such as this becomes public knowledge, the shame is so great that the people directly involved do commit ritual suicide. Yes, they do, as a means of expiating the dishonor that they brought to their families, themselves, their profession, their country, and the whole human race. Might be a suggestion in there for the Murdoch family. You think?
synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Gray Brecken. He writes, I think this is to the president. Mr. Obama, would you like to show your fellow citizens what enlightened government once did to get us out of financial calamity caused by unrestrained capital? And what it could do again if we had compassionate leaders? Thanks, Gray. Email here from Guido in Key West. Are we still carried on a station in Key West, Kathy?
I don't know.
I don't either. Guido writes, Mike, about 5 years ago, Bill O'Reilly hung up on a caller to his radio show when the caller mentioned Keith Olbermann's name. O'Reilly then made a point of saying that he had the caller's phone number and that he was going to alert Fox Security to have them deal with his inappropriate remark. At the time, I thought that O'Reilly was just being his typical faux tough guy, bully boy self. But after this last week, I've begun to believe that there may be some sort of security organization within News Corp that does more than send rent-a-cops around the buildings to check for lights turned on after hours. And now, with today's news about the not-suspicious death of whistleblower Sean Hoar, I'm convinced that O'Reilly's threat might be more than a threat. In fact, I now wonder about all the recent scandals that suddenly surfaced out of nowhere. Elliot Spitzer and Anthony Weiner come to mind. So does Schwarzenegger, whose scandal surfaced after he left office and was no longer of use to the right-wingers. Also, Randy Rhodes mentioned on her program today that Fox News has, on a couple of occasions, announced the deaths of people who were thorns in the sides of various right-wingers before the cops announced their deaths. I know that most corporations are run by sociopaths, but most of them seem to be of the I don't care who gets hurt as long as I get rich variety of sociopath. It now seems that News Corp actively and intentionally takes psychopathy to the next level. Oh, well, maybe I'm just being paranoid, right? It's not like Rupert Murdoch is out to dominate the politics of all the English-speaking countries around the world, right? Guido in Key West. All right. We'll get back to that in a bit. The war profiteering company, formerly run by Dick Cheney, the company that, through its subsidiaries and itself, managed to cause the deaths, and in some cases, and most generally, discomfort of people who had volunteered to put on the uniform of the United States military and go fight for capitalism. You'd think that Halliburton would have been a little bit grateful for that, because the soldiers who died and were horrifically wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan did so that Halliburton, among others, would enjoy fat bottom lines. They were not there fighting for freedom and justice and mom and the flag and apple pie. They were there fighting for companies like Halliburton. Well, Halliburton says the expansion of oil and natural gas drilling in North America helped boost company earnings by nearly 54% in the second quarter. Revenue also hit a company record for the period. Yes. Yes, see how it works. See how it works. 20 million Americans unemployed. But Halliburton, whew, profit. The company today reported earnings of $739 million for the 3 months ended June 30th. That compares with $480 million for the same period in 2010. CEO Dave Lazar says that growing energy demand around the world will continue to drive Halliburton's business. And Halliburton's report kicks off earnings season for the oil industry, so they will all start to produce their earnings and profit records, reports, I should say, within the next week or so. And we can see just what all those veterans who are struggling now for medical care, psychological support, a place to live, some way to figure out how to deal with PTSD and their alcohol or drug addiction, or the missing arm, or the brain that had a chunk blown off. How grateful these oil companies and these war profiteers really are.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lies.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Gray Brecken. His message is, would you like to show your fellow citizens what enlightened government once did to get us out of a financial calamity caused by unrestrained capital, and what it could do again if we had compassionate and enlightened government? If you know of anything in your community built by the WPA, the CCC, or other Roosevelt agencies, please contact us at Living New Deal Berkeley. Or I'm sorry, livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. And we will use it to map New Deal America. I think Gray sponsored once before, didn't he? Okay, write it down. Living New Deal.berkeley.edu. And what they're looking for is anything in your community built by the Works Progress Administration. Is that what WPA was? CCC, the Conservation Community Corps? What was CCC? Or other Roosevelt agencies. Contact them. We had to do this, Kathy. We've got, wasn't Lake Lanier the result of, yeah, but it was not just a WPA project. It was, Rural Electrification, what was it? Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA. Wasn't that a Roosevelt agency, TVA? I don't know about that. It was? Okay. Well, hell, Lake Lanier, which is the main source of water, that and the Chattahoochee River, for 5 million people in the Atlanta area. See how it works? Anyway, if you know of something in your neighborhood, do this. This would make a very interesting map. LivingNewDeal.berkeley.edu. Thanks, Gray. Civilian Conservation Corps. That's what it was. CCC. Switching from Halliburton's second quarter profits, don't you just love it? Isn't it just wonderful that there are little corners of the American economy that are just making fabulous amounts of money? Wait till the oil companies start publishing their profits, their revenue statements. Whew. They live in a different world, Halliburton. Yes, we will continue to show profits because of our astute leadership. Leadership of Halliburton to the global economy is the same as the Murdoch family to the publishing business. Any place you find conflict, you'll find these cockroaches and parasites. Disaster capitalism. Naomi Klein's phrase. Disaster capitalism. They love it. Give us death and destruction. Give us chaos. Give us revolution and counter-revolution. Smash things. Bomb things. Set things on fire. We'll be there. Robert Reich, who was Clinton, among other things, Clinton's Secretary of Labor, and so on and so forth. You ever go to his blog? It's worth a read. Anyway, the one today, he said, I've spent enough of my life in Washington to take its theatrics with as much seriousness as a Seinfeld episode. A large portion of what passes for policy debate isn't at all. It's play acting for various constituencies. The actors know they're acting, as do their protagonists on the other side who are busily putting on their own plays for their own audiences. Typically, though, backstage is different. When the costumes and grease paint comes off, compromises are made, deals put together, legislation hammered out. Then at showtime, the players announce the results, spinning them to make it seem they've kept to their parts. At least that's the standard playbook. But this time, there's no backstage. The kids in the GOP have trashed it. The GOP's experienced actors, House Speaker John Boehner and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, have been upstaged by juveniles like Eric Cantor and Michelle Bachmann, who don't know the difference between play-acting and governing. They're in league with Tea Party fanatics who hate government so much they're willing to destroy the full faith and credit of the United States. Washington has gone from theater to reality TV, a game of hijinks chicken that could end in a crash. So now the Republican Party's experienced actors are trying to retake the stage. They've set a vote tomorrow for so-called cut, cap, and balance plan, featuring an immediate $100 billion-plus cut from next year's budget and a constitutional amendment requiring a balanced budget. These sons of bitches. Reich goes on, the plan would be a disaster for the nation, of course. A cut of that magnitude when the economy is still struggling to get out of recession would plunge it back in. And a so-called balanced budget amendment would make it impossible to counteract future recessions with extra spending and tax cuts. But hey, it's all for show. The Republican Party's adults know the president would veto their cuts, and they couldn't possibly muster the two-thirds of the Senate and House needed to override the veto. Nor, obviously, do they have the two-thirds necessary to pass a constitutional amendment. The point is to give the kids more votes they can wave in the direction of their Tea Party constituents. It's hoped that the so-called cut, cap, and balance plan, along with McConnell's proposed Republican vote disapproving the president's move to raise the debt ceiling, will be enough to get the juveniles to raise the debt ceiling before the August 2nd deadline. John Boehner told reporters Friday, quote, the cut, cap, and balance plan that the House will vote on next week is a solid plan for moving forward, end quote. You want the translation? Here it is. I hope this will be enough play acting to get their votes on the debt ceiling. But even if it is enough, the bigger problem remains. There's still no backstage where the real work of governing this country can occur. At best, the vote to raise the debt ceiling kicks the can down the road only until the end of 2012. And by then, if we don't elect adults, the kids will be in charge. Ah, Robert Reich. At his blog. Every time I pick up or open an email that has his blog in it, it's just like, God, why isn't this guy in government now? Why isn't Paul Krugman in government? Why isn't Stiglitz in government? Why isn't Elizabeth Warren in government? What do you think of the heat wave? Huh? 18 states, North Dakota, Texas, all the way to Ohio, under heat advisory, a heat warning or a heat watch. That's according to the National Weather Service. In some parts of the country today, the temperature felt like anywhere from 110 to 115 degrees, the heat index. A spokesman for the National Weather Service said, quote, this is unusual. Unusual. Yeah, I guess so. And in the meantime, about a fourth of the country is suffering under a drought unlike anything since the Dust Bowl days. Every single county in Texas has been declared by that stinking, rotten, lousy federal government to be a natural disaster area so that people who live there can apply for low-cost loans. Why isn't Rick Perry telling Obama's government to get the hell out of his state? Well, that's right. Perry is busy putting together his psycho prayer puppet show where they're all going to get together and pray. Amen. But come on, Rick, you said you wanted out of the union. You slimy bastard. Here's your chance. Every single county in your state is on fire, one way or the other. Why don't you reject the federal government now, you cowardly bastard?
C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malone.
Chad, yeah, the bronchitis won't go away. Maybe it's not bronchitis, Mike. Maybe it is something real serious. This hour has been sponsored by Gray Brecken and his message. Would you like to show your fellow citizens what enlightened government once did to get us out of a financial calamity caused by unrestrained capital? And what it could do again if we had compassionate and enlightened government? If you know of anything in your community built by the WPA, the CCC, or other Roosevelt-era agencies, please contact us. And we will use it to map New Deal America. And here's where you contact them. LivingNewDeal.Berkeley, BERKELEY.EDU. Come on, do this. You can do this. I want to see this map. LivingNewDeal.Berkeley.EDU. Anything that you know of in your community, wherever it is. You know, the other night I was talking about those roadside rest stops. Not the kind along the interstates. Dear God, no. But along secondary roads, as well as main highways. Back in the day when main highways were, two-lane. A lot of them were two-lane. Some of them were two-lane going each direction. But, I got all nostalgic about the picnic bench and the little outhouse and all of those that were built. It was just a project, just something to make traveling by car, which was really taking hold post-World War II, a little more pleasurable, a little more, families would head out into the country on Saturday or Sunday and go for a picnic. Those were WPA projects. And I know that for a fact because my old man worked on them. I remember being told those stories. So what livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu is all about is that. So see what you can find and tell them where it is. They'll find it on Google Earth, I'm sure. Google Earth. All right. Anyway, thanks to Gray for the sponsorship for this hour. Oh, and by the way, this would be a good time to make the plug. There are three ways now you can support this show. You can buy a podcast for yourself or to donate for a trivia contest. You can sponsor an hour of the program like Gray did, or you can contribute any amount you wish using PayPal. There's a new link at MikeMalloy.com with all the options, just a mouse click away. And as Kathy wrote here, as independent broadcasters, we truly count on your support to keep us keeping on. Thank you. I know Kathy wrote it because she always puts thank you. Right? Independent directors of News Corp are beginning to discuss whether or not Rupert Murdoch can stay on as the CEO of the company he founded. Bloomberg is reporting. Murdoch has been at the head of News Corp and its Australian predecessor since 1952. And he and his family have maintained an iron grip on the company ever since. Yet, citing two anonymous sources, Bloomberg writes that people within the company, quote, have begun questioning the company's response to the crisis and whether a leadership change is needed, end quote. Nah, I don't think so. I think the company needs to be utterly and absolutely destroyed. Kill it. The Murdoch octopus is a beast that needs to die. It deserves to die. It is not about news. It's about rumor and innuendo. It's about destroying people that have a political point of view that differs from the Murdoch monsters. Kill the goddamn thing. Put a stake right through its heart. Just let the stock price keep falling. See, nobody really has to do anything except sell your shares of stock. Get rid of it because you don't want to be the last one left with turning out the lights when you leave the gymnasium, do you? Let it die. It's a filthy, it personifies predatory, filthy capitalism. And it also is a clear demonstration of what journalism has sunk into. Not all journalism, no. But so much of journalism is about this kind of garbage. Fox News deserves to die. The whole Rupert Murdoch conglomerate deserves to die. Put a stake in its heart and get it the hell out of the United States. My God, get it out of here. The damage this corporation has caused in this country to our electoral system, even the ability to talk to each other. Kill it. Kill it. Exterminate it. Let's rehabilitate Tom DeLay and have him just aim all of his bug juice at this group of cockroaches. We'll be back after the break. You're open now if you want to join in. 877-996-2556 is the number here. Let me ask you something. Do you really think that... No, let me rephrase it. What is the rationale for, in the most recent instance, the governor of Oklahoma asking the citizens of that state to pray for an end to the heat wave? What is that? Mary Fallon, is that her name? Is she the governor? She said, quote, "I think if we have a lot of people praying, it moves the heart of God." What? "I encourage Oklahomans of all faiths to join me in offering their prayers for rain." And she goes on, "The power of prayer is a wonderful thing, and I would ask every Oklahoman to look to a greater power and ask for rain." The Oklahoma has seen only one day below 100 degrees this month, and there have been more than 100 wildfires. Now, if the governor of Oklahoma really does believe that God is, I don't know what their God does. Is he off creating other universes or other atoms in the, I have no idea what their God does. But apparently the governor of Oklahoma thinks that he's waiting to see if the people he's torturing in Oklahoma will respond by begging for the torture to stop. You know, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away, or whatever, blessed be the name of the Lord. Do people, I don't get this. I've never understood religious people once I realized what a scam it was. But do these folks, this is purely rhetorical questions you don't have to answer, but do these folks really believe that these incredible temperatures and wildfires that are just eating them alive, that is somehow a happenstance of something? Now, Pat Robertson would tell them it's because there are too many queers in Oklahoma. I only know of a few, but Pat Robertson would say, no, God is dropping his veil of protection where it concerns Oklahoma, and he's going to burn your asses until they're all crispy. I mean, do these people really believe, does the governor of Oklahoma believe that this firestorm that has hit her state is a result of what? Just a confluence of meteorological conditions, but that if they ask the heart of God for relief, that he will lay down his book or whatever and go, what? What? Hello? Well, you got a heat wave down. Oh, okay. Hold on a minute. Here, let me pot it down a little bit. Here. What's it been down there? 100 degrees? You ought to try hell if you think 100 degrees is hot. Of course, most y'all are going to hell anyway. What is this madness? What is this madness? Why doesn't the governor of Oklahoma prevail upon her constituents and all the folks of all the faiths in the state of Oklahoma, which is an oil-producing state, I guess, why not prevail upon them to start developing non-earth-polluting technologies, and then this goddamn heat wave will go away? But no, they're going to pray to some sky spook, one of their, a friend up in the clouds. What is wrong with people? The power of prayer is a wonderful thing, the governor says. No, sweetheart, the power of prayer is you talking to you. It goes no further. Now, that's called prayer, when you talk into the atmosphere. When the atmosphere talks back, that's called schizophrenia. And Texas Governor Rick Perry, back in April, declared three official days of prayer for rain. And what happened? Forest fires got worse. You got God pissed off, Eric Rick. Actually, what happened? Rick got his wild-ass Texans to pray for relief, and Molly Ivins intercepted the prayer and rained down hellfire on him. Pray for relief from the heat? Okay, I mean, you know, whatever rings your chimes, right? Sir Paul. When I first saw this, I thought we were talking about Paul McCartney. But they're referring to, what's his name, Sir Paul? Sir Paul Stevenson, commissioner of the Metropolitan Police Service, commonly known as the Met or Scotland Yard, said he decided to step down. And now John Yates, the assistant commissioner of Scotland Yard, decided to step down. This is just astonishing. Well, let's hope that the Murdoch crime syndicate evaporates. Just evaporates. Filthy Nazi bastards. Okay, let's do that. Nora's in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hello, Nora.
Hi there, Mike Malloy.
Hey.
This weather is very horrifying and terrifying out here. I'm afraid to go outside. I feel like I'm getting broiled within 60 seconds.
Even in Minneapolis, it is...
Oh, Mike.
I know, it's awful.
Well, you know what I want to say is that... it's easier for me to believe the prophecies that I used to hear read about 25, 30 years ago than those. I think the Christian God's gone out of power, and the goddess of Earth is back, coming back into power again. And like they predicted, purification of Earth would be coming if they didn't stop sucking out all the blood of Earth, which is petroleum, and taking out the heart of Earth, which is the uranium, that the Earth was going to fight back, like trying to get rid of fleas, trying to get rid of the humans. And there would be many storms and many wars. Well, at a time when the population has to go down, down, down.
Yeah, well, that's...
But we have to get to the heart of humans to stop what they're doing, not to the heart of some god that's out there or whatever. I mean, the humans themselves got to change what they're doing, that what they're causing. If you listen to science, what they've started now, even if they stopped all the CO2 and everything else now, it would take like 100 years for this to end. They've really effed up now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all, Nora. I was looking at the Weather Channel today, and when I saw what the temperature is supposed to be or has been in Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's like, what? In Minnesota? Oh, my God.
We're so lucky that energy assistance gives anybody who is on qualifies for energy assistance to get a brand new computerized remote control air conditioner, and they take away your icky old one that isn't all efficient.
Yeah, well, that's beats just having a fan that stirs up the air a little bit, that's for sure. Nora, I got a boogie. Thank you. Take care. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Henry writes in regarding the Roosevelt years projects to put people back to work. Henry writes, Mike, one thing worth mentioning, I think, is that all those roads FDR put into place gave everyone from McDonald's to Starbucks access to a fairly ceaseless and captive customer stream. No bootstraps needed. Henry, that's very true. Well, the whole idea of the interstate highway system was to connect everybody. I know it was called the National Defense Highway or something. Supposed to be able to land and take off airplanes when the Russians finally attacked us or some horse hockey. But the interstate highway system was why bootstraps weren't needed. But yeah, I get the point. Henry. One open line here if you want to talk. 877-996-2556. Stephen is in Burbank. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. I have this strange psychotic notion, this vague memory that a couple of years ago I called a world-famous talk show host when there's this private enterprise entity doing wiretapping and stuff. And the thing that that came out of that was the buzz phrase, retroactive immunity.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Cool. Well, They're good. That it wasn't a dream. It was real.
No, it was real. It was real.
Yeah, because I can't differentiate sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I have that problem every night from 9 to midnight Eastern time.
Oh, no. Well, I could recommend some English gin, you know.
No, that's all right.
Martini.
No, I've given up just about all depressants and stimulants. I really have. I just have a very a dull existence now. I used to be able to alter reality anytime I damn well felt like it, but I'm just to the point now where reality is so interesting. I had no idea. I had no idea.
but here's what's cool. The left, because the right wing and the power mongers and control freaks are so shallow, they're so predictable. Let's say that it winds up that Rupert Murdoch stays in the United States. England and Australia want to extradite the guy, put him on trial. But somehow the Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that somehow. And he's just a citizen exile. I mean, what are the chances of that? What are the odds in Vegas?
I don't know, but when you find out, let me know. I'll put $20 on that one.
Well, I think I put $100 on it, and if I'm correct, I get back $100 and a penny.
The odds are not very good.
Well,
oh, my. All right. Well, thanks, Stephen.
Okay, boss.
Take it easy.
Will do.
But take it. All right. What's this? Lulzsec. Lulzsec, the infamous hacker group Lulzsec, made a comeback today by hacking the website of the British tabloid The Sun and redirecting the front page to a fake story about Murdoch being found dead. There it is, The Sun online. The story read, Rupert Murdoch, the controversial media mogul, has reportedly been found dead in his garden, police announced. Murdoch, aged 80, has said to have ingested a large quantity of palladium before stumbling into his famous topiary garden late last night, passing out in the early hours of the morning. Right. The group is Lulzsec. The story is from rawstory.com. Lulzsec. Lulzsec. Is that how you pronounce it? Lulzsec. Good on you, boys and girls. That's what it takes, I think, is just to, since these people are beyond shame, you know, just laugh them over the horizon. Make fun of them. Ridicule them. Make them out to be the objects of asininity that they really are. You know, how the government of the UK, liberal and conservative, took these rat bastards as seriously as they did is beyond me. Laugh at them. They're swine. They're scum. Look at how far into corruption their filthy enterprise took. I don't know what's left. How many football games in the UK did they change the scores on? You know what I'm saying?
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Yeah, don't tell anybody. 25 before the hour. Jeff is in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Jeff.
Ahoy, Malloy. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How about you?
Oh, doing pretty good. I hope that ugly Aussie bastard lose even more money by dropping my cable TV.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you, do you think old Rupert Murdoch lobbied for and had special access to the warrantless wiretapping program?
You know, you gotta wonder. You gotta wonder, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, he was such a Republican groupie. You think he's basically had a very expensive ass-kissing, how would I put it, operation going on, basically, you know.
Well, yeah, I guess it started that way, but then it flipped. And any kissing of certain anatomical parts went from Murdoch doing the kissing to Murdoch providing that part of his backside to be kissed. Did you notice that? It flipped.
Right.
And that's where the trouble starts. You know, if Murdoch wants to be some kind of a suck-up, which I'm reasonably sure that at various times in his so-called career he has been, that doesn't make him any different from any other punk who's trying to make it. But once he gets to the, I mean, take a look at the banking, investment banking industry in this country. They tell the members of Congress how to vote rather than the members of Congress telling them the restrictions that will be placed on their businesses so they don't screw the American public repeatedly. Murdoch has done essentially the same thing, as it's all coming out now in this investigation in the UK, and probably if the investigation hits here, the same thing will prove true, that various and sundry government and police officials were kissing Murdoch's backside. And, you know, that's the danger. Jeff, thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. That's the danger, you see. But this is what capitalism does. Capitalism is a corrupting system. Ultimately, it corrupts and or destroys every single thing it touches. The only people who survive a capitalist onslaught are the people at the very, very, very top. You know, you keep hearing about 1% of the population or 0.5% of the population has generated X amount of the nation's wealth, while the bottom 99 or 98 or 97, whatever the hell the number is, has generated 1/5 as much, whatever the numbers are. And everybody acts as though, oh, that's shocking. No, it isn't. That's capitalism. Please. That's the ultimate, not just the goal of these pigs, but it is the expected outcome. Capitalism destroys everything it touches. Everything. Take a look at scientific research. Take a look at these private labs that have been working hand in glove with these huge pharmaceutical companies. So you get a private lab, medical lab, genetic lab, whatever, and the backing comes from government research, which is, in so many instances, is good because there's no profit motive in. But now don't jump in my mouth with that. Just hear me out. The Internet started out as a government project. Everybody knows that. But these private laboratories suck up tens or hundreds of millions of dollars from the huge pharmaceutical companies until they finally come up with a product, a pill that's designed to do X. The only problem is while it's doing X, it will also make your kidneys fall out or your lungs stop working or develop brain tumors or prostate cancer or cancer of the liver. What was it? Chantix. Have you heard that story about Chantix? You notice how you don't see their commercials anymore? Why do you suppose that is? That was the little old pill that you could take to help you stop smoking. Right? Remember? And they had these little sweet testimonial-style ads. You know, well, my son told me, Mom, you gotta stop. Don't ever pick up a cigarette, okay, Mom? Please don't pick up a cigarette. And now it turns out that Chantix will kill you. I mean, which is, I don't disagree, that's one way to get you to stop smoking. Is to take your life, okay, but that was a classic example. The people who developed the drug knew how dangerous it was. But this is capitalism. This is Bootstrapville. I mean, how many products are there that you could say the same thing? It just goes on and on and on. You watch a 30-second commercial for some of this poison that's being sold as medicine. And the voiceover spends 10 seconds telling you why you should take it. And then 20 seconds telling you about the side effects. Suicide, mental illness, cancer, lung disease, tuberculosis. I mean, it just, and why? Well, that's to get rid of the fungus on your toenails. Jesus God. So what Murdoch has done in the UK should not be the least bit surprising to anybody. Why is there a surprise? Everyone knows that his media outlets are nothing but garbage holes. I mean, everyone who can still, to any degree, think rationally. I'm not talking about these crazed bastards that sit in front of their televisions day in and day out, hour after hour, having their brains turned into liquid by sitting there watching Fox, watching this endless parade of halfwits and morons and liars and fraudsters just pumping out the BS. But if you're not part of that group, you know what the story is on the Murdoch organization. You know what he's about. Look at his family. Jesus Christ, have you ever looked into the eyes of his kids? You talk about demonic, but they've got their dad as an example. Capitalism. Ooh, isn't this fun? Capitalism is destructive. Ultimately, it will devour you, your family, your children, your home, your planet. Why does that essential fact of capitalism escape 95% of people in this country? Oh, 50%. Why? You're seeing the result now. Wake up, you morons. Turn off Fox. Oh, never mind. From Roger. Mike, you speak for me about 98% of the time. I'm so grateful you're on the air. We need your passionate defense of democracy and your fight against greed's horror, the total undermining of what the founders consider to be reasonable and just. I think all the founders had every reason to deploy their fleecing by the British East India Company. Maybe that was the first great corporation, but I have a fear that those who most need to hear your voice of justice may be turned off by your sometimes strong name calls. Your passion is always in evidence, and it might go much further without that limit. You've always got me in your corner, Roger. I know. I've heard that many times, and I I wish there was something I could do about my coarse language sometimes. But as ripped up as I get, for me to sit here and go, oh, darn these darn people. These gosh darn, and I'm not trying to mock you at all. I mean, you're absolutely right. But I just can't. The only thing I can do is, I don't know, get into different business, I guess. Thanks, Roger. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. The police in London are examining a computer, a phone, and paperwork found in a bin near the home of Rebecca Brooks, the former chief executive of News International. Oh, yeah, of course. Why not? According to The Guardian, the UK, a bag containing the items was found in an underground car park. The car park is yards from the gated apartment block where Brooks lives with her husband. Blah, blah, blah. What do you want to bet? And Piers Morgan on CNN, did you know that he is a former editor of News of the World, the now closed paper? Yeah, Piers Morgan. And apparently he... according to Raw Story, he dedicated a segment of his program tonight defending Murdoch. He was joined by former New York Post reporter Vicki Ward, who claims to be a personal friend of Murdoch's. So, you know, the whitewash is beginning. Morgan, the former Post reporter, said, Piers, I just got a call an hour ago, and Rupert wanted to tell me personally that, you know, he's not okay. Ever since he met with Millie Dowler, or the murder girl's parents, he hasn't felt the same. His voice has been cracking. People around him are very concerned. His children are very concerned. This is a man who's more devastated than he has ever been in his entire 80 years. And, you know, he's appalled at what's going on his watch. And I think he's as anxious to get to the bottom of this as we all are. And then Piers Morgan said, I just cannot accept, although there is this huge witch hunt going on to bring him down personally, I don't accept that he himself would be party to illegal activity. And then Ward said, I completely agree with you, Piers. She went on, he became a friend to me when I was at the New York Post. He would stop by my office and talk to me. He wanted to know what tomorrow's headlines were. He would not in any way want to interfere with the story. This is a man who cares so much about his legacy. He once said to me, all I want is for my kids to be decent people. Piers Morgan said, I wouldn't want this to become a kind of valedictory. He's perfect. And that sentence doesn't make sense. The former Post reporter went on and said, the one thing about Rupert is that, yes, he can be ruthless. Yes, he has thinning hair. Yes, he pees standing up. Yes, he can be ruthless. But actually, we can talk about this. He's ruthless, but also entrepreneurial. He built an empire, often at great personal risk. But tomorrow, I expect to see a very, very sincerely contrite person. She concluded, well, tomorrow he appears before the British Parliament. Piers Morgan now is involved in the phone hacking scandal. A member of Parliament in the UK has called for Piers Morgan to be questioned. But this is the way it goes. Robert is in Columbus, Ohio. Robert?
Hey, Mike. What I wanted to say is if they've done wrong, they'll be punished. But what I do not understand is, why is it such a big thing that you're bringing up in all the news media when you have a president who is...
Well, let me try to explain it to you. First of all, your first sentence is so ridiculous as to render it nonsensical. You said if they've done wrong, they'll be brought to justice or something. We had 8 years of administration in this country, Robert, that took us into illegal wars, that authorized torture, that murdered civilians, and nothing ever happened. As far as Rupert Murdoch is concerned, he is emblematic of the really murderous, terrible side of capitalism, where an enterprise like a newspaper empire can be used to destroy people. So I have a feeling, Robert, that you're kind of a right-winger, and just frankly, I don't want to talk to you, okay? Thanks for calling, but don't call again, all right? Go away. Go call some Fox program while you still can. Jesus. We have a president. I don't know what he was about to say. But you know what? I don't care. I really don't care. Tom is in Bradenton, Florida. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Mike. I think Robert is in a proud alumnus.
I can't hear you, Tom.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I was going to say Robert sounds like an alumni of Fox University's.
I think so.
Yeah, it's incredible. I haven't talked to you for a while. I just wanted to talk to you about a couple things if I got a chance. First, man, your language is cool. We like it. It's Zappa-esque, you know, Frank Zappa.
Hey, Tom, let me put you on hold for a second because we've got a break coming here in about 10 seconds, and I'll come right back to you as soon as we come back from the break. If you want to chat tonight, the number is 877-996-2556, so do join us. Well, you have some right-wing freak just keeps calling in. Throw the bomb down the telephone line. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Right before the break, we were talking with Tom in Bradenton, Florida. All right, where were we again now?
Yeah, Mike, the first thing, the language I think is a good thing. I mean, you're on at 9, the Eastern time, you know. We listen to Tom Hartman to get the G-rated intellectual stuff, and we listen to you to get the rest, man. And you guys compliment each other real well, let me tell you. So,
Well, I appreciate it. It's always been a problem, and I all I can do.
You gotta be who you are, you know.
Yeah, right.
I know that you're a really good guy because you care about things so much.
Well, that's kind. I can only own up to the bad language and try to or coarse language, I should say, and try to keep it at a minimum. But you were talking about WPA bridges.
Yeah, up in. I've been traveling a lot. I'm almost 50. Up in Saranac Lake, Lake Placid, New York.
Oh, yeah.
There's and actually, on Whiteface Mountain, which is the Olympic downhill skiing in 32 and 80 in Lake Placid, the whole elevator shaft, and there's a big tunnel, and there's a big observatory on top, are all built by WPA Roosevelt money. And the guy who... is the elevator operator tells you, gives you a tour.
Right.
And it's beautiful. They have these little plaques that says WPA. I think they're made out of steel. And what I was telling Kathy is that it does hurt me that I'm very liberal, Mike. Very, very liberal. And it does hurt me that Obama is not more like Roosevelt. I mean, he is so charismatic. He had everybody with him. He had the Senate and the House with him. And he kind of fumbled the ball.
Yeah.
First of all, not going after Bush and those guys. But maybe, here's an interesting thing. Maybe he's so smart. I mean, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt. But maybe he's so smart that he just played dumb the whole time and let these guys hang themselves. Like what seems to be happening at Fox. It'll be interesting to see what his administration's response is. If they are like, okay, you know, you guys messed up and we're going to have to investigate you. That would be great. If they step off the pedal again. Man, am I going to be upset.
Yeah, I hear that. Tom, thanks, man. I appreciate the story about the WPA projects up in Lake Placid. Yeah, they're all over the place. Thanks, Tom. Matter of fact, listen to this. Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Mike, inspired by Gray's sponsorship message, I did some Googling to see if there were any WPA projects in my area. It turns out that the hospital in which I was born was built with WPA funds. When I was born, it was called Margaret Haig Hospital. Frank Haig, the infamously corrupt mayor of Jersey City, named the hospital in honor of his mother. That hospital that the WPA built is no longer a hospital. It's now a high-priced luxury condo complex. What was built with public funds is now a vehicle for private profits. It figures, doesn't it? Paula Bayonne. It does, Paula. Honest to God, it does. And Kay Petrini in San Francisco, our education affairs correspondent. Mike, I'm attaching a photo that I snapped while I was out walking the dog this afternoon. This is the Sunset Recreation Center, which includes a playground, ball field, tennis courts, basketball courts, and a gym. It's very popular with people in the neighborhood, especially those who have children. I was struck by the informational banner, which reads in part, quote, originally built by the San Francisco Recreation Department and the Works Progress Administration, the Sunset Playground opened in 1940. In 1951, Mayor Elmer Robinson dedicated an upgraded facility at Sunset. 60 years later, and with voter support through the 2008 Clean and Safe Neighborhood Parks Bond, we are able to provide much-needed improvements to this heavily used and popular facility, end quote. So there's another, they're all over the place, WPA project. And Kay adds, it's not just roads, bridges, and the electric grid that are in desperate need of upgrades. Small but critical infrastructure projects, like restoring life to a community center after 60 years. These projects are languishing on back burners across the country. The only reason the one in my community is receiving the attention it needs is because local voters approved the funds for the project, something that would never happen in the I ain't paying no damn taxes part of this nation. Our recreation center was built during the Great Depression using federal funds. Can you just hear the John Boners out there reacting to that piece of information? What? Using government money to pay for a rec center? What the hell is that all about? People are responsible for providing their own recreation. Oh, you mean they live in one-room apartments and don't have any safe places to let their kids play? Well, they need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. End quote. In contrast to the Republicans and the majority of Democrats running the country today, Franklin Roosevelt understood that providing access to art and recreation for unemployed Americans was not only a way to put people back to work, but to keep their spirits up during a very difficult time. Can you imagine anyone in Washington today floating the idea of funding public artworks with federal funds? Works like the colorful WPA murals that brightened so many cities during the Great Depression? That's the difference between then and now. FDR got it. Obama does not. Our infrastructure is falling apart, yet no one is willing to step forward and propose the kinds of programs FDR did, programs that succeeded in getting this nation out of the greatest economic catastrophe up to that time. Okay. That's one of the central complaints I have about Obama and this crisis that we're in. He had enough votes, and he could have done a lot of it by executive order, but he had enough votes to push through a WPA-like project that could have done so much in terms of putting people back to work, in terms of repairing the desperately needed repairs on the country's infrastructure, and as Kate points out, providing something other than just repairing dams, bridges, and the electrical grid. How many WPA writers and artists were there? How many American authors and writers and artists that went on to their own personal fame stayed afloat during the Depression with these little grants, just enough to pay the rent, buy some groceries, keep the artists and the writers working? Can you've heard these right-wing pig dogs. You've heard them so many times, these scummy right-wingers. Where it concerns art or music or dance or theater and federal funding for those kinds of projects. Look what they try to do every single time these rat bastards get in power. What they try to do, the National Endowment for the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities, National Public Radio, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Destroy it, burn it, kill it, turn it over to private. Get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it. You nasty devils. Living New Deal. Berkeley.edu. That's the place that's putting this this map of all the various projects that FDR found so necessary, not just for the pocketbooks of the spirited Americans back in the 30s, but also for the hearts and the souls. Come on, for real. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Mike, just outside Las Vegas, we have a little WPA project called Hoover Dam. What a waste. The money for that dam could have gone to the investment bankers at the time to help line their pockets or even fund Hitler, as Prescott Bush would have liked. Take care and keep it lit, and don't forget to use the term rat bastards from time to time. Bob, a subscriber from day one and for 1/50th of a century. Okay, Bob. And from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Remember the insistence of the Republicans that the stimulus package passed in 2009 specifically not include money for public municipal swimming pools? That's one of the things that the WPA did to get poor kids off the streets in the summer so they'd be less inclined to mischief. Unlike Obama, the Republicans do remember FDR and the Democrats' legacy, and they're doing their very best to undo it with Obama's acquiescence. Yeah, what a shame. What a shame. Bill is in Escanaba, Michigan. Hello, I'm sorry. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, we're doing okay. My concern was when the president said he couldn't guarantee Social Security, they should have shot back. What about Department of Agriculture cards? Because when those people won't get their cards, that's when the machetes are going to disappear off the Lowe's shelves, which you talked about the other night. And that's when the civil unrest is going to come. There's a lot of people on those cards.
The machetes are going to disappear off the low shelves.
They haven't already. You know, when you brought that up, those cards help a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they're tied to the budget. And I also want to say one more thing. He could have, the President Obama could have took all the way, all the tax incentives, breaks, whatever, the first 2.5 years. Through legislation with a Democratic Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Should have done it then instead of bringing it up now.
Yeah, he should have. He should have. And, you know.
I understand he was busy.
Yeah.
But.
He was busy.
He is, you know. But. I don't know.
I don't
know. I'm very worried about that. The ag cards. It feeds a lot of children.
I hear you. Do you, Brian, Escanaba, Michigan, is that in the, that's not in the Upper Peninsula, is it?
It's in the UP.
Oh, it is in the UP.
Iron Mountain.
Oh, is it like a vacation spot this time of year?
I do see a lot of campers up here. There's a lot of little homes along the lake. People come up here.
Are you?
But it's 95 degrees.
90. Oh my God! Do you still work? Are you retired? What?
No, I work.
And
I'm
what?
I'm a truck driver. I'm a logger.
Oh, logger.
A lot of paper mills up here.
Yeah, a lot of paper mills in Georgia too. I'm real familiar with logging truck drivers. Back in the day, they used to work real hard and didn't make a hell of a lot of money. I hope that's not true where you live.
You're making enough to get by.
Well, that's good. All right. Well, Brian, thanks.
Yeah, good evening.
All right, you too, man. Thanks for checking in. Yeah, down here they call it Holland pulpwood. Only pronounce it pup. P-U-P. What do? I drive a pulpwood truck. Pupwood? First time I heard that. Pupwood? What is pupwood? Lord, when I first moved here 40 years ago, well, I had been here before that. But trying to learn Southern English, no offense. I don't mean this as offensive. It just is. But trying to learn Southern English, real hardcore country Southern English, is like learning a different language. At least the idiomatic part of it and the various pronunciations and expressions and so on and so forth. Pupwood. I drive a pupwood truck. All right, we have a break coming here, and we will. I've I've got, somebody sent me here something that it's just hard for me to believe. I'm really, matter of fact, it came from Jude. The diaries of Joseph Mengele. Well, I'll tell you when we come back. Stay with us.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, this is Malloy's show. This is at Raw Story. this is so. I don't know what would I. Word disgusting doesn't quite get it. I don't know anymore. My vocabulary is even the coarse language is just totally. Useless to express outrage. Here's this. The diaries of Nazi war criminal Joseph Mengele, who carried out gruesome medical experiments on prisoners at Auschwitz, will be auctioned in the United States. They'll be auctioned. These are the diaries written after the war, once Mengele had fled to, where'd he go, Brazil? And the diaries contain his philosophical reflections, autobiographical stories, and poems penned between 1960 and 1975. The Connecticut-based auction house, Alexander Autograph, said the auction, which is due Thursday, would include some 3,500 pages of, quote, hidden journals, unquote, written by the man who terrorized the inmates at Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp. The items, mostly small spiral-bound notebooks, are expected to fetch between $300,000 and $400,000 at auction. He was never brought to trial, of course. He died in Brazil in 1979. Jesus, God. Whew. Who could, who and why buy that stuff, huh? Prairie 2 writes, Hoover Dam was originally a President Hoover project to funnel money to the big contractors. Workers lived in camps only a step above gulags and were paid a fraction of a living wage. The death toll in building that bridge or dam was outrageous. Strikes were met with armed goons and lockouts, as there were thousands of desperate men to replace every striker. When FDR came in, that all changed, and people went to prison for their treatment of workers. FDR's Interior Department changed the name to Boulder Dam, but when the Republicans took over Congress in 1947, they changed the name back to Hoover. At about the same time, they created the so-called right-to-work laws. Jesus, God. Oh, man. Where are we? Right here. Bill is in Mound, Minnesota. Listening on KTNF. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I just want to say briefly, I'm looking forward to seeing you again this year at the show. Where I got a VIP ticket this time.
Oh, really? You're flying out there?
Yeah. I saw you last year. I'm the bowling machine mechanic.
No, I know. I remember you. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. I follow you around like a little puppy dog. But in anyway, you had mentioned before, I'm an ashamed Vietnam vet. I mean, I know why I was there. You know, I get health care from the Veterans Hospital here in Minneapolis, and this is a very good hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't relate to a lot of these guys. They're still wearing Vietnam jackets, and they got license plates that say, you know, Vietnam. Hey, I mean, I know why I was there. McNamara, he was the filthiest son of a bitch ever to in Westmoreland.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
To touch on, you told me once before, and this is true about FDR, he created the largest amount of entrepreneurs ever.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these right-wing
scum.
Don't realize that.
I know.
And their business might have even spun off of FDR's policies.
Mm-hmm.
Am
mm-hmm.
I correct?
No, you're absolutely correct. That was from it's an article that I quote every once in a while. I drag it out. It's written by Clint Gold, who was a mayor of a town in Oklahoma. And the column was simply, what have the Republicans ever done for workers? And in it, he lists just program after program after program. And with FDR, the capitalists were just rubbing their hands together with anticipatory glee, thinking about all the veterans coming home and how, they would have to have jobs and it would drive wages down. You'd have, 8 million people looking for work at the same time. And, the fact that the Republicans wanted to do nothing to help these people, absolutely nothing. And it was the various post-war, like the GI Bill and all these different, programs that were put together by liberal Democrats to help people make the transition from, a war economy that had gone on for 4 years into a whole class, as you mentioned, of entrepreneurs who never would have had a chance had they not had the money, the stipends, to go to school on the GI Bill, to go to trade school or school of the academics or whatever. And can you imagine these filthy Republicans thinking about something like that now?
Well, they are. That's exactly what Governor Dayton is fighting against here. These sons of bitches. They won't. He gave up a lot, but he so far he's steadfast on they want to cut grants for public education.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm very fortunate. I'm grandfathered in. I live on Lake Minnetonka, and that's very unusual these days because the amount of wealth around here over the last decade is mm-hmm. incredible. You should see these huge mansions out here. Lake Minnetonka has got 125 feet or miles, 125 miles of lakeshore.
Mm-hmm.
And But anyway, I'm getting off track. It's just that I'm very fortunate to be able to hang on so far. Mm-hmm. You know. But where was I with Dayton? I'm seeing more and more of these little shuttle buses around that the wealthy send their kids to private schools, whether they be parochial or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing less and less of the big long school buses like I went.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a public school just as you did, as my son did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. But anyway, I don't want to take up any more time. I just wanted to check in.
Well, I'll look for you Saturday. Just come up. You know, they have those breaks. Just come up and chat, okay?
I sure will.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care. Take care. Jeffrey writes, Mike, your comment that learning to understand Southern English was like learning a new language resonated strongly. I've called Southern English countryese for more than a year now. I've been exposed to the blue-collar version of countryese for 35-plus years, and I'm still unable to fully comprehend that language, so I'm crystal clear here. I've learned Chinese and Thai with some success. I can say with confident satisfaction that I would never master countryese, and I'm damn glad of it, Jeffrey. Well, Jeffrey, it opens up a whole new world for you. yeah. All right, we got to take a break. And if you're on hold, we will definitely get to your call here before we have to boogie. We're off Thursday and Friday, right? And Monday, Brad Friedman will be subbing so we can do the Seattle gig. We're really looking forward to it. If you live in the Seattle area or if you live in Minnesota, get on an airplane and come on out. We'll be right back. For the hour on the Malloy program. Jeff is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. Great to hear from you. Back to those WPAs. I used to skip class and go to and smoke pot at a place called Wyandotte County Lake.
Uh-huh.
Great place. And Wyandotte High School, Wyandotte Swim Club, Golden Gate Bridge, where I live in San Francisco, and the school I currently teach at in San Francisco, WPA Projects. So... You know.
They're all over the place, and the thing that is astonishing to me, you know, obviously, well, not so obviously, but I wasn't alive during that period. But my parents, my grandparents, both told me about it, and all those projects, and how. Now, granted, Roosevelt did not come into office with all that bubbling under the surface. He had to be kind of shown the way and pushed.
Well,
right.
Maul Perkins was a big push, too.
Who?
Francis Perkins.
Oh, Francis, right, the Secretary of Labor. who came up with all sorts of ideas to get the country back on track. Where are those people today? How come we don't have anybody with any kind of vision for this country? Nothing, nobody, not even Obama.
You know, have you seen Michael Moore's Capitalism, A Love Affair?
You know, I didn't see that one.
Well, there's a scene where these workers take over a factory that they're going to sell, they're going to ship it overseas.
Right.
And they said, no, you're not. And they stood up, and they kind of like did a strike. And they somehow they bought, I have to re-see the movie, you know, see it again. Mm-hmm. Somehow they saved their job and the factory from moving overseas. And if some senator, congressman, anybody, a mayor would show up at one of these places where people would do this, they would be elected God. If this is what this country's waiting for.
Yeah.
Somebody that stand up to these rat bastards, as you call them.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, great show. What is the name of that website where they talk about the WPA?
Living New Deal, all one word, livingnewdeal.berkeley, as in university there, berkeley.edu. livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu.
Edu.
Yeah.
All right, well, good luck up there in Seattle. No, it's great to talk to you.
All right, man. Thank you. I appreciate it, Jeff. Take care. Mark is in San Francisco, also listening on Green 960. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
You know, I used to play at that Sunset Gym for years.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, basketball. I used to play. I probably played at overall about 30 years of my life in that gym.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it's priceless. You know, for the community to have something like that open. They kept it open all the time. You go up there and play basketball. Once in a while, they'd have intramural games. But, yeah, we got so much use out of that gym. It was a big part of my life.
Well,
they were talking about it. Just brought back memories.
The photo that Kay sent me that she took apparently today, there's a banner hanging out there now that explains just a couple of sentences, the fact that when it was built and the fact that the people through a bond issue decided to restore it. So if you drive by there anytime, I guess until they finish the project, you'll see that very banner that Kay was talking about.
Oh, that's nice. You know, Mike, the Republican Party doesn't want to raise taxes ever.
No,
ever.
Of course not.
What's sad about it is, this Tea Party group is going to just, they got to push us to the edge for something's going to give.
Well, what I'm hoping for is that the Tea Party will destroy the Republican Party, A, if that doesn't work, then B, that the Republicans will go ahead and refuse to do something that they did seven times when Bush was president, and that is go ahead and allow the debt ceiling to raise with no argument. And if they don't do it, then the country starts to go into a default. And when that happens, you know, the people in this country have no idea what all this means. I didn't have any idea until a couple of people started educating me on what default means if the debt ceiling isn't raised. I mean, we can all sit around and bitch and moan and complain about the fact that we're $14 trillion in debt. But when you take a look when you look at the fact that about 70% of that debt accumulated during the Bush years, you gotta wonder about this filthy Republican Party. I'm telling you, they're hell-bent on destroying everything and replace it with a form of government that I don't think anybody is gonna appreciate. Now, if that happens, then people will go to the streets and we'll have our second revolution.
Yeah, you know, Mike, you're right. And if they don't raise that debt ceiling and go ahead and cause this country to go into a depression, I think that's when the slingshots come out. And I think that's when all hell's going to break loose.
I hear you.
And you know what? It might be worth it, Mike, if we can get rid of this cancer in this country, because we don't have health care because of them. You know, we could have so many things in this country, but this Republican Party doesn't care about the people. It just cares about corporations. And it's setting us so far back to compete in green energy and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cancer. And if that's how we got to get rid of it, you know, it'd be worth it.
I certainly don't disagree with that, Mark. Thanks.
All right, brother.
Thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal.
Take care.
All right, you too. livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. If you come upon projects that clearly are identified as being WPA projects or anything from that era, Let them know at this website. Because it just seems to me like it's a good project to be involved in. You know? Because, you know, not casting aspersions on anybody, it's not our fault that our young people don't have a clue about what the WPA was or about who FDR was. All the Republicans have done is demonize the man and his projects and the fact that he saved their asses. It was Roosevelt who saved capitalism. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.